Hey, everybody, Dean Criss back in the studio this week. Really excited. Got a great guest with me. I'm going to be joined with Andrew Colville from the Yarmouth PD. He's a sergeant there, and he's got some really good kind of fresh ideas or takes on leadership as it relates to. Had him in a class recently, and I think you're going to really enjoy our conversation just about leadership, personal growth, and all those things. So Kelly's also going to join us. So as we always say, sit back, turn up that volume, get ready to change your life.
Hi, I'm Dean Criss. Welcome to Straight Talk on Leadership. This is what we'd like to say is the no BS zone, where we give you leadership tips, ideas, and practical suggestions to help you become a top leadership performer. Our goal is simple. Help you become the best version of yourself and reach your highest potential as a leader. So sit back, turn up the volume, get ready to change your life.
Here we go. Hey, folks, Dean Criss, as promised, I'm in the studio this week with Andrew Colville from Yarmouth PD. He's a sergeant there. He's also, I believe he's a Marine Corps veteran of the United States Marine Corps, also served in Afghanistan. And we're going to talk a little bit about some of the lessons he learned in the military, but he's also a sergeant at the Yarmouth PD. And if you don't know where that is, it's on Cape Cod, and it's a great community up there. Had a chance to visit with him. We were actually in Randolph, Massachusetts. I was teaching a class, a master level presenter course and leader course, and just had some great discussions with Andrew. And I thought, man, this guy, he's young. He's got some ideas about leadership. He's actually out in the field seeing it happen right now. And so we just want to have a conversation with him to kind of get you to think about some of your things as it relates to leadership, some of your things as it relates to like leading the younger generation, but also how the younger generation connects with the older. And you know, there's dynamics going on in the, you know, our police departments. It's all over the country. We're also going to be joined by Kelly. Kelly's going to sit in. And if you're joining us by video, you can see this on YouTube, and you can actually see Andrew. He's a really good looking young man, and may want to, you know what, just you want to take a chance to look at. He is a, you know, Kelly is a good looking young man, isn't he, Kelly?
I appreciate that.
He's a handsome man. That's about it. Your son's age too. So,
I think he's actually younger, maybe than my
son. Yeah, he's like could be a kid brother to Adam and Andrew.
I know, and I'll tell you what, I always love to have these young, handsome looking young men on the show here with us. But so, thank you, folks, for joining. Before we get our podcast started, I want to say thank you to all of our listeners. And you know, I say this every podcast, and can you believe, Kelly, it's like 130 some odd podcasts. I mean,
oh yeah.
Most people quit at like 10 or 20 or 30, but thankfully to our guest, and thankfully to kind of what we're learning in the classroom from people and what we're pushing and reading and all that stuff, man, we're just continuing to go with this leadership thing. And I'm really thankful. And I want to thank everybody that joins us every week. We've got a faithful audience of people that I hear from weekly on just via email, text, calls about the podcast. And it really helps all of us. And so, you know, that's part of our classroom journey. We want to add value not only before the class to get you thinking about what's expected, and then in the class, we want to have a great experience. And then our post-class journey is getting you to push that leadership growth to another level. So, folks, really appreciate all of you. If you like this podcast, hit that subscribe button and please pass it on to someone, another friend. Let them know. And if you folks out there riding on the midnight shift, hey, stay safe out there. You folks riding the day shift, hey, stay safe out there. If you're in the gym working out, keep pushing it. Remember one thing, if you want to give your best, it only takes doing one more. And we're going to maybe talk about that a little bit, but just one more rep, one more thing means that you're giving your all and your best, even when you don't feel like it, just one more. All right. So with that being said, Andrew, hey, welcome to the show, man.
Thanks, Dean. It's good to see you again.
All right. So let's introduce you to our audience, and you tell me a little bit about you. And of course, you've got this background in the United States Marine Corps. And just give us the shortened version of kind of you in a nutshell of who you are.
Yeah, so I grew up in Yarmouth, went to high school here. I was kind of like a sort of misplaced kid. My parents had a divorce that put a lot of tumultuous years resulting in that. And anyway, I joined the Marine Corps in 2006, and that kind of changed my life and sent me in a good direction that I attribute to everything that I've done since then. I went to Iraq in 2008 and then Afghanistan in 2009. I got out in 2010. And when I got out, I was kind of lost and had dealt with some traumas from that and some combat experience and just really kind of lost my sense of purpose in life and was just confused all over again. And at the time, the Yarmouth Police Department offered to self-sponsor me to a police academy, which means you go there, pay for it yourself, which I was lucky enough that the GI Bill from the VA paid for it. But when you're done with the academy, you can basically write your own ticket because you're a fully trained police officer. So I did that. I worked in Provincetown as a reserve for about 6 months just to get some experience. And then Yarmouth started hiring, went through the process with them. And then I got the job in 2012. And, you know, I've never really forgotten since then how grateful I was for that opportunity. The chief at the time, Frank Fredrickson, gave me, and the deputy chief, Steve Xaros. They just really took a chance on me. And I looked at it as though I had to earn my spot on that team every time I put the uniform on. And it was so drastically different and better than what I had done in the military that I just never forgot that lesson and how grateful I was to have the opportunity. So I really didn't want to lose sight of that. As the years went on, you know, I became a field training officer, got involved in some other things. And then I eventually got promoted in November of 2019. So I've been a sergeant since then, just about a little under 3 years. So,
well, you know, and a little bit about your family life.
I'm single now. I had a serious girlfriend I was living with for the last 4 years, and we went our separate ways. No tumultuous thing there. You just grew apart. And my mom is on the Cape with me. So is my father, and my brother and sister live up in Boston. My brother's 37 and my sister's 33, and I'm going to be 35 in October.
Well, you know, when you look at kind of supervision, being in it 3 years, you still have that fresh view of leadership. And I don't mean that to be more of a negative thing, but people who are in leadership for a lot of years, they certainly have a lot of kind of experiences and issues and problems. And let's just be really bluntly honest. Leadership is not easy. It is absolutely simple. The concepts are simple. The ideas are simple. But leadership is not easy. It can be really simple to do it, but it is not easy to do. And what I mean by simple, it can be simply, I get a relationship with you. I ask you to do something. You believe in me, you follow. That's pretty simple. I mean, but realistically, getting all that done, it takes a lot to execute that for sure. So give me some of your observations about this fresh look of leadership. Like, you know, when you, and I say that with respect to the number of years in the military service, but there is a difference when you actually start to lead people. So give me some of your observations about leading that, you know, I think that our audience would like.
Well, a lot of my views on leadership, they came from the Marine Corps, and most of what stuck with me was what bad leaders were more than what good leaders were. Because the good leaders, I mean, that stuck with me too, but the bad ones, I never forgot. I never forgot the things they did, you know, how they made me feel, just how I would think to myself, how could someone do that and honestly think that that's a smart idea or a good way to go about things? Or where is this coming from that they're coming up with these ideas? So when I got into leadership positions, especially when I got promoted to sergeant, I never forgot that. And the biggest thing that stuck with me from my military experience in leadership was, you know, do you genuinely care about your people or are you just pretending to look good? You know, and I think if you really care, people feel that it comes from a place of good intention that people, they can relate to and they can see it. And then that means a lot to people. And that can come from the decisions you make and the actions you take and just the way you carry yourself, the relationships you build with people, you know, and just knowing your people. And
so parallel, let's talk about the Marine Corps for a second. And, you know, we got a chance to know each other a little better because we had the Master Leader course. And in that Master Leader course, you know, you get a chance to hear other people's stories as well as your own and what develops you and what you're working on, that kind of stuff. And I think I was impressed with one of your stories about, you know, and I think it's the ultimate thing that everybody wants to know about themselves. Like, I mean, I was struck by how you explained that. And I will tell the folks about what I'm talking about, because I think everybody wants to know this question, or wants the answer to this question, is when I'm under fire, what will I do? I know I can train for it. I know I can prepare myself for it. I know I can play as a kid all these games about what you're going to do under fire. But particularly in Afghanistan, you had this opportunity to really experience combat on multiple occasions. But there was this kind of first time where this happened. And I parallel that to leadership too, because to be honest, it doesn't take quite the same courage to jump out there and lead, you know, just when you're telling somebody to go over here and do this or go over and do that. Don't get me wrong. It takes a lot of courage to be, or be courageous to be a leader. But when you're in battle and shots are being fired and your life is literally on the line, that's a different level of courage. And I think, you know, a lot of people forget that our young men and women who are in the battlefields, or soldiers who have been out there, they make those decisions. It does mold you to who you are. But talk about that moment. Like, you know, I remember the story you told about, you know, you had been trained to do it. You had told yourself you're going to do it. Then that moment hits. And so, you know, tell our audience a little bit about that, if you would.
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess the short version of it would be, when I was in Afghanistan in 2009, we were part of this big push that President Obama did. It was a Marine Expeditionary Brigade to go take back the Helmand Province from the Taliban that had taken it from the British several years earlier. And we're kind of running their operation down there. In July, we were in this little town called Khan Neshan, which is near the Pakistani border. And we got in a really heavy ambush, and this ambush was the first time I'd ever really been shot at or seen explosions, been on the receiving end of mortar fire, RPGs, any of that stuff. So, like I explained to you in the class, I had an idea of what I thought that would be, and then the reality of it was very different. And it struck me very quickly that I was really a scared 21-year-old kid, and struck me in a really profound moment where I kind of had to make a decision how I was going to handle that. And you know, I decided to start shooting back, and then everything kind of just came to me, and then it played out as it did. And we were lucky that we didn't lose anybody or have any serious casualties in that firefight. But that moment really kind of shaped me for the rest of my life, and how, you know, everything kind of seemed easy after that. I knew that if I could handle myself in a moment like that, where I for the first time in my life knew I had the real possibility of dying, and there was people that wanted to kill me, I just knew that everything else after that would be easy. And I just never let that moment escape me. I think about it every single day, and not, you know, not in a bad way, but I just, it really defined me as an adult from that point on.
Well, you know, what's interesting about that is that, you know, if you really break that down, that it, there are so many life stories going on in that moment. You know, it's like, you're actually in a situation where you got to make a decision to fire back, to protect yourself, protect other soldiers. But it's almost like that molds you. And it's the same kind of stuff in leadership, because you have these moments, and certainly not to compare any leadership decision other than life and death that we would make to compare to that. But every single day, a leader defines himself with the decisions that they make or they don't make. And so in that very moment, you said, okay. And I think I remember you talking about you took a second. They were firing. You were in a turret or something like that. Or am
yeah. I? And yeah, I ducked down in the turret because, you know, I was getting shot at, explosions. And that was when I made that decision. All right, like, you're going to stand up and do what you're supposed to do here. Don't let this moment overtake you.
Yeah. And what I love about that is you take the leadership lesson for that. All of us in really tough moments want to really duck down and take a moment to decide, okay, what are we going to do? And you know, I can parallel that to tough decisions, nowhere comparing to being actually shot at in live rounds. But there are many moments as a leader, you want to duck down and you want to say, okay, what am I going to do here? But yeah. I think what's interesting is you gathered yourself, and then you found yourself up there kind of making the decision to engage. And you said that changed your life. And I can see it in you. I can see that, you know, you have this kind of mindset where I know things are going to be tough, but I can handle it because I made that decision. And I think that's so reflective of the young men and women in our society today, that they make those decisions, and then we get them in the workforce and they're out there doing the job every day, we really don't realize how much or how powerful their ability to handle things really is. So with that being said, and one of the things interesting is Andrew is 35 years old. And one of the things I often do in a classroom is find the kind of the temperature or the scope of the ages, just so that I can kind of get a better connectivity. And Andrew, you can see being a very experienced young man in battle, he took the fact that I called him a millennial all week really, really well. And I know it was like,
it's usually at my work that the millennials are the label that are given to the 22-year-old kids. So it's that term gets confused a lot on who actually is a millennial, so it just, I think it's funny. But
yeah, and it actually was. And what was funny was I looked at Andrew and I said, do you realize your generation is the generation that ruined the world? And he took that pretty good. And I mean that jokingly, meaning that, everything was going along good. The millennials come along and now they start pushing stuff and they start wanting things and they find out what technology, and there's some of the brightest, smartest people on the planet, are millennials. But it's kind of funny, that interaction with that. So it was really great. And I really do appreciate you taking that so well. One of the things Andrew did was he gave me a book, like In the Killing Zone. And it was written by a Vietnam veteran. And about halfway through that book right now, Andrew, and I'm really reading it kind of leisurely because it's like, it just talks, and I grew up in the Vietnam era of watching soldiers and people come back. And remember, when we talk about current day kind of the way people look at law enforcement, I can actually remember seeing on the news that people would spit on soldiers after the Vietnam War when they would come back. They would call them baby killers and all that. Matter of fact, this author talked about one of the reasons why he wrote the book was because he had his arm amputated in the war. And one of the things that he did is he was walking out and a guy saw it and he said, "What happened to you?" And he said, "I just came back from Vietnam and I had, got my arm shot off." And he said, "I'm glad you deserved it." That kind of thing. And I thought, wow, that's kind of, if you look at the times right now, law enforcement is going through a really tough kind of time with some of the image and some of the things that are being said in law enforcement about law enforcement officers. And what I want to do is encourage them to realize, yes, it is a totally different time, but our military used to be looked at like that. And it will take a time to get us back, but we've got to do a lot ourselves. United States military did not sit back and say it will get better. Matter of fact, they went on a huge campaign to get everybody to understand, first of all, that the military was good. And then it certainly helped with 9/11. But they went on this campaign that you be all you can be. United States military is a place you can grow up, da 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 da. They just didn't sit back and wait for things to return to normal. They went and recaptured the narrative, which is what we need to do. So if you would, from your perspective on what you're seeing, and we're not talking about Yarmouth in terms of I'm sure it's a very supportive community and all that of police, but tell us about what you're thinking in terms of the times we're facing in law enforcement right now.
Well, I mean, I haven't been doing this a huge amount of time, but it's become very obvious to me that there's ebbs and flows in the nature of policing and how it's perceived by the public, depending on the current events. And a lot of those opinions are based on knee-jerk reactions. And the unfortunate thing about that is that it seems that we've come to a time where knee-jerk reactions dictate decisions made. And some of those decisions aren't very well thought through, and they're to appease people in the short term, and they lose sight of the long term. And that's not a good thing, but it's a reality that we have to deal with. And we can't control a lot of those decisions, but we can control our reactions to them and how we're going to make them work to our advantage in a lot of ways, or how we're going to navigate them and all that stuff. And I just think that complaining about it and hiding from it and pretending it's not there is definitely not how to handle those things.
Yeah. And you do, one of the things that I have talked to a lot of leaders, and one of the things that I get to do is I'm one of the luckiest people in the world, because I get to, first of all, spend my days with cops. I get to travel around the country and kind of get a snapshot of what's going on in a lot of areas of our country. And one of the things that I always encourage police chiefs to try to do is to never forget that they are responsible for the narrative and the marketing of their agency in terms of in a good way. Now, it doesn't mean that there's not going to be bad incidences and things that happen where you've got to withhold information or it may be an investigation that's going on. But remember, the public wants transparency and they want people to, you know, they want explanations for why things are occurring. And you can do that. And you can't forget that the news media is not our marketing arm. They are not our marketing firms. And so as a result of that, you at times are going to be faced with negative stories, but you should be on these social media outlets telling your story so that people can see it and people understand it. We can't sit and wait back for stories to develop and get out of control. Now, we're currently seeing the Uvalde police shootings where the guy went in and just slaughtered those kids and those teachers. And we're seeing that narrative right now where the media is even focusing on infighting between the investigators versus the Uvalde police chief. They'll make a story out of anything like that. But I do believe that the community deserves more answers, and somebody should get in front of this story and be the face of this story. It takes a lot of courage to do it. And they're kind of waiting on jurisdictional, you know, what I say about tactical things like the school shootings is it should never be based on jurisdictional guidelines. It should always, when it's going on and active, should be based on technical skill sets. Those guys and gals on the ground who know what's going on ought to be able to make those decisions, if you will, and shouldn't be an administrator in a cold room somewhere off radio or somewhere making decisions. I do get that. But anyway, so the time is pretty tough right now. What are you learning about leading people in today's world? Like, you know, give me a snapshot of what that's like for you. Like, what are you seeing and trends or stuff going on?
I think you're seeing a lot of negative reactions to the current times in this whole police reform and the adopting of post certification in Massachusetts has got a lot of people scared. And when cops get scared, they kind of just dig their heels in. You know what I mean? They don't like change, and they have a hard time accepting that things are the way they are, and we have to do the best we can with it. And I think that's having a big effect on it. And you got a lot of older veteran cops that really don't want that change. And then the narrative that comes down from them to the younger cops is just negative. And then they adopt that negative perspective without even really knowing what's going on. And one of the ways I try to explain it to the people I talk to is that this is specific to the post and police reform, but to us, it seems ridiculous, some of it, because Yarmouth is a really good town where we get a lot of support and we don't have a lot of issues. We hire good people, we support them, we back them, and we have an administration that backs us too. But there's other police departments where these things don't happen. And these are real issues that needed to be addressed. And some of it is being addressed. It may be in a knee-jerk reaction way, but it's still something that needed to be addressed one way or the other. And it's up to the police departments on how they're going to react to it and how transparent they're going to be about it and how educated and informed the administration and the supervisors and all the leadership are going to get so that can transfer down to the patrol level and so on and so forth and make them feel good about it. Like, hey, this isn't something to be terrified of. It's something we're just going to have to navigate. We're all on the same team and we back you guys. And every step of the way, we'll explain why this is being done, where it's coming from. And, you know, I think that a lot of cops and younger cops specifically are walking into this climate of, they feel just disrespected by a lot of things that they may not even really understand. And if there was people educating themselves and explaining why these are happening, they would understand more and say, okay, that makes sense. You know, it goes back to that whole start with why. Like, people just want to know why they're doing things. Make this make sense to me. And that's kind of a respect and value thing that everyone feels entitled to in a good way, though, you know. And I think our leadership at the police department is doing a really good job with that at Yarmouth. I mean, we have a lieutenant who's basically full-time job is to research these things every step of the way and let us know what's going on and explain this to the sergeants, who then explain it to the patrol officers. And we're handling it well, but I still see that narrative among some people that they just, you know, it's kind of doom and gloom instead of like, okay, let's just deal with this and make it make sense to us and move on.
And you know, I really like what you just said, and I don't want our listening audience to miss this in terms of leadership, because, you know, you basically just, in a recap of that, not that you need it, but just to clarify, you said you do need to explain the why to the younger generation, which is so, so true. And I talk about transformative leadership. And one of the key components of transformative leadership is explaining the why before they ask. But you just said something that just literally could be a real guide for leaders out there. And you said something, you said, make this make sense to me. And I think that is, people could really use that when they're thinking about their leadership response, or they're thinking about how they're going to get a relationship with someone, or when they're thinking about, how do I connect to this person? And I just love that. You just said, make this make sense to me. And I think that is so indicative of the way the world is now, because there are a lot of questions, and we used to set them those questions, but we don't anymore. We openly want answers to those questions. And I think that is so true. The other thing I want to say is that you describing kind of the police environment, I think is spot on. I do want to add one thing that I think leaders need to really take into account when they're dealing with subordinates. A lot of times leaders don't believe that they're responsible for the morale of their people. Well, the answer to that is yes and no. They are, but they're not, but they kind of are, but they kind of not. A leader can't ignore or turn a blind eye to morale. I don't care who you are. There's an esprit de corps to any group of individuals that requires the leader to pay attention. When a leader's not paying attention to morale, it can be really devastating really quickly. And it can be simple things. But I do want to say to our podcast audience that the one thing I want you to make sure you understand for all of us is that anger is a real part of police officers' feeling right now and their response to the public, because they think the public to some degree has turned on them because they all got kind of pushed into this barrel of being like Derek Chauvin. And then the George Floyd thing just ignited this negativity that splashed on all of us. You know, it wasn't like, no, I mean, you know, I get it where Yarmouth really, you know, likes your community or likes your police. I get it. But that negativity splashed on you. It was such a big hit that it got all of us. And I think when that negativity splashes on you like that, you just really don't know how to handle it. And a lot of leaders are not having discussions with cops, and cops are angry as hell right now. They're mad at the way the world is. They're mad at the perception that cops are bad, and they're mad because they feel like the community doesn't support them anymore. And leaders have to have discussions with cops about those feelings. If you don't have them, they get worse. And one of the things I say is, when you deal with anger, if you deal with it at the anger level, you can control it. But if it takes its own life and it forms a grudge, man, you're done with that. The other thing is, it's creating habits in our young cops that are detrimental to police service. And I don't know if you're seeing this, and I'm not asking you to, you know, say anything about Yarmouth PD. I'm just asking about your general over observation, is that cops are looking the other way. They're not being aggressive on stops anymore. They're not doing the things they should do. And that's not everywhere, but that's happening a lot. And it's forming the habit of not paying attention like they should. Like, I know this, when I was a young cop, one of the things we were always told, when you pull up to a red light, when you're up at the red light, you pay attention. You look at the red light, you look at the people, you pay attention to the intersection, you pay attention to people in the intersection. Nowadays, a cop pulls up to the red light, you can't even get their attention. They're on their computers, they're not paying attention, they're looking away. And I have done this, my own experiment, try to get cops to look at me. I can't do it. They're not paying attention. I mean, I'm not running around with a banner in my, you know, I'm not waving my arms like a crazy person either, but I'm just making eye contact when they won't do it. And we're just, we're getting bad habits out of all this nonsense, and leaders have got to pay attention to that stuff. And so I'll give you a chance to respond.
Yeah, I think it starts at, let me start this off with, I have a whiteboard in my house, right? That it's right by my door when I'm leaving every day. And above it, I have a wooden sign that says relax. And then on the whiteboard, I wrote down three different things. The first one is, what is your why? The second is, make a difference. And then the third is, control your perspective. And, you know, you talked about this in your class, like the why and the just cause and that, but you know, being a police officer is a long career. It's not like when you go in the military and you do 4 years and you get out and then you move on with your life. I mean, there's a lot of ups and downs to it. And to decide what your reason for doing it is can be drastically different at different times. And I think that's something you constantly have to reevaluate and tell yourself, you know, this isn't something that is going to be easy. And it's not something that's going to mean the same thing to me at every point in my life. You know, you're not the same person at 25 as you are at 35 or 35 or 45. And the career doesn't translate to that way of thinking any differently. You know, I just really think you have to look at, why are you doing this? Because, and especially with this, the younger guys, including myself too. And, you know, I can't speak on the other generation, but you could go do something else. You could. So there's a reason you're doing this job. And I think you have to reevaluate that reason. And you also have to reevaluate the reason and the why of just your life in general. I mean, what are you trying to get out of every situation you're in? What are you trying to contribute to others around you, to society, to whatever, you know? And then the other thing of make a difference, I think that to me, that could mean just having a positive conversation with one citizen and changing their outlook on police officers, or helping them with a problem there was no solution to, or just making them feel respected and heard. You know, so for me, that can keep my why going just through a shift. If I have one good interaction with a person that I feel like made a difference to that person, then I feel like I've made a difference in the bigger picture. And that keeps me going. And I really enjoy that. And the last thing of control your perspective is, you know, you look at the things you can control, not the things you can't, and then you figure out how to navigate those things. And you try to look at things from a good place, not a negative place. And that's a lot of work, especially in our job, because being a police officer, you're surrounded by a lot of negativity. You're dealing with conflict all the time. You're dealing with negativity in the workplace. You're dealing with people on the worst days of their life at times. And that can really drain you. I mean, that's a prolonged beating that cops take of dealing with that negativity. And I think if we control our perspective, and it's a work in progress, but it's one of the only things that really makes a difference, is to try to focus on the good things, try to focus on what you can change, what you can control, not the things you can't. And I mean, that sounds simple and it sounds kind of cliche, but that stuff does help me tremendously with this. And constantly monitoring and reevaluating what my why is something that keeps me interested and passionate about what I'm doing.
Well, you know, understanding what your personal why is a major deal. And I think what you said right there was just, I mean, awesome. I mean, when you talk about it, just, you know, you talk about understanding what your why is, relax and, you know, control your perspective. I think those things are so great. And they're also great leadership things, not only personal, but when you're trying to lead people, those are really good things. I think that you've hit on something there that is really important for each cop. And what we always like to do on Straight Talk on Leadership, our podcast, is give people things they can do to really make an impact. And I think the goal of having one or two positive conversations a day with our citizens and our interaction, I think that's the key. You're not on a national level. You're always going to have stories that are going to knock our image back. And because that's what the media and also people look for. Because as you said, Andrew, we're surrounded by negativity everywhere. And that's just the way the world functions. I mean, the world functions on negativity. I mean, I'm not trying to be a naysayer, but it is true. And you've really got to fight to be positive in this world. I swear you do. And
it's an uphill battle in this career too. And it's a constant work in progress. It really is.
Oh yeah, it is. And I think that goal of having one or two positive conversations a day with outside folks or people that are not in the profession can go a long way. If you force multiply that with 700,000 cops, then you can see really quickly that even if you go down to the ones who are actually, you're talking about probably 350,000 patrol officers, you're talking about a big impact every day, potentially a million conversations that can occur You know, and it doesn't take long to force multiply those if people will just apply that, you know. And
I think that, you know, I'm sorry to interrupt you.
But no, go ahead, please. Go ahead.
I think the cops forget that we're in the business of people, of dealing with people, dealing with their problems, solving their problems. And sometimes cops get this idea that people's trivial problems are beneath the scope of what they're supposed to do as a police officer. You know, why are we dealing with this? Why am I getting sent to this call? And it's like, well, that's our job. You know, we are there to maintain that fabric of society that keeps it from going into chaos and, you know, whatever. But I just look at it as though you might not be able to change the world, but you can change people's worlds and you can make a difference to them. And that should be enough to keep you going right there. If you're in this profession of service, which is what it is, you're a servant to the public, and that's not to sound demeaning or anything like that, but that is your job. And especially when you're in a department the size of Yarmouth, which is I believe 62 sworn from the top down, you're involved in the community and the public, and you have to be, and that is a huge part of your job, you know, almost the majority of your job. And if you're in a early on in your career thinking this is beneath me to have this conversation with this person, or how can I just move on from this and not deal with it, that's not the right perspective to have. And sometimes I feel myself thinking that too, like, you know, I don't want to deal with this person's problem. And then I flip a switch in my head where I'm like, all right, take a step back and just listen to this person, let them talk, just let them go, you know, have active listening, interact with them, and just let them get it out and then offer a solution. And that makes a huge difference to people.
Oh, absolutely. And I think it's so key, you know, is to have those conversations and to kind of have that perspective. I mean, this job is tough, and you know, you've got to come into this job understanding that. I think I love what you said earlier. You said, I'm not the same person I was at 25 and will not be at 35. And then if you mark that on out, it's 45, 55, 65. I think, wow. I mean, you look at that, you're exactly right. And I think the key thing is to continue to push yourself towards that servant mindset. One thing, you know, that I tried to do was to evaluate where we were. And I got in my mindset, this thing on this servant officer class that I developed. It's actually like a two and a half, three day course, where one of the things I do not think we do, we assume we do it, but we do not do it in this profession, is we don't teach people the blueprint for servitude. We really don't teach, we don't hand them the blueprint. Okay, this is how you are a servant. We just assume that they get that part of it. And there are many steps to being a servant. I mean, you know, the first thing is you got to have the right mindset. Second thing is you got to understand what your just cause is, like why I'm in this business. Third thing, understand your why. And the fourth thing is you got to be walking in your purpose. You know, when you talk about that blueprint for servitude, we don't do that. Second thing, we don't teach people how to communicate from a position of authority. A lot of times you look at conversations that you have, and you said something about conflict earlier, and cops deal with conflict every single day. But I think a lot of cops need to understand that if I'm going to deal with conflict, you got to first understand what it is, and it's two people at opposing viewpoints. And the goal is to bring them closer together, not further apart. And I think that a lot of times cops, or just police in general, sometimes their attitude at work draws people further apart instead of closer together. Now, that's not saying cops are bad at all. It's just, you know, the realities of the world. And that's just the way we look at it. And so when we don't teach people how to communicate from a position of authority, and I think we really need to do that. We don't teach emotional intelligence from the standpoint of what really connects me to the next person. Like, there are things that I can do that automatically cut my connection off, and I got to be aware of those things. And then there's things that I do that can, you know, make connections so much simpler. We just don't do those things. And I think in the police world, we've got to realize as leaders that we assume people have those skill sets, but they really don't. And we are major into, which I believe, and if anything, the Uvalde shooting showed this, that every single police officer across this country ought to do everything they can to be tactically proficient and ready to do what's necessary in order to protect their lives and the lives of others. They should be. There is absolutely no doubt. Tactical proficiency is a must, but servant mindset is also a must, which means you got to have the mind of the warrior and the heart of the servant, or like I like to say in reverse, the mind of, or the heart of the servant and the mind of the warrior. And when you put them in that way, then you understand what needs to be done. And I do think that we're in a really tough times right now. So what are you seeing in terms of leading people at a young age? What are some of the challenges that you have?
I think giving people a perspective on what their why is and their purpose in this job can be difficult at times with all the changes that are going on right now. And I think people just want to be heard, you know, all people, but especially police officers. They want to feel valued. They want to know that their input matters, and they just want to be heard. And if you just take the time to listen to people and to give them constructive feedback and show that you care, I think that is one of the biggest ways to build relationships. And that gets lost sometimes. I get it. Police departments are built on this paramilitary structure of chain of command and all that stuff. But in a department my size anyway, like I said, it's 62 sworn officers. That only works so much. That works when it has to work, when we have to do things, you know, by the chain of command. But the rest of the time, it's a tight-knit team of people where we need to have those personal connections and need to know what's going on. And in the leadership aspect of it, I think just knowing your people is so important. And if you can tell something's not right with them, pulling them aside. And if you can tell someone's running on fumes because they're tired, you know, pulling them aside and asking them what's going on in their home life. And just knowing your people. I mean, we spend a lot of hours in this job, and a lot of that drains people to the point where they don't know how to fill the tank back up, so to speak. You know, they don't know how to separate it, and they get very consumed in the culture and the world. And a lot of people, they say they have a good work-life separation, but they really don't, you know? And it's one of those things you just constantly have to monitor. And I think that is far as the newer generation goes, because I still consider myself part of that newer generation, but there's obviously a difference between a 22, 23 year old that's hired and me at 35, you know, with my life experience and being a police officer for 10 years. But I think everyone from the most senior officer to the youngest guy in the department has something to offer. They have some perspective of way of looking at a situation that no one else has. They have some way of thinking that no one else has, and they have a lot of value to bring to the table, and you just have to pull that out of them. And once they realize they have that, they develop passions for things and routes in their careers they want to go and things that mean something to them. Because, you know, let's face the facts here, and this is something that gets dealt with a lot as far as morale goes, is people, you know, not everyone can be promoted to a sergeant, not everybody can get a detective spot, not everybody can get a, you know, a specialty position, and people get really discouraged with that. And I think that to pull those people aside and explain to them the things they are good at and how valued they really are at a time when they need it can be the difference between that young officer, veteran officer, whatever, their career going one direction or another.
No doubt. And, you know, one of the things that struck me in my conversations with you in the classroom was that you're very well read. You read a lot of stuff. And on these podcasts, we are always pushing that kind of reading is that introductory way to start growing yourself. Of course, the number one thing is mindset. The other is the simplest way to get the most out of anything is to read, and read it with the intent to give it away, read it with the intent to teach it, and read it with the intent for you to really, you know, do the things that you need to do. Are you reading anything good? Anything you'd recommend to our audience out there?
Yeah. I mean, I got three books. I just finished one of them, but the first one I read that really changed my perspective on life and policing in general, I think every police officer should read, is The Four Agreements. Oh, yeah. That really drives home the sense of not making decisions from a place of ego and looking at the intent behind what you're doing. And also just not taking things personally, because in this line of work, we take a lot of things personally. We forget that the source in which the negative energy is coming from is not something that we have to necessarily take at face value.
Tell our listeners the four agreements and the author there, because I think that, you know, I've had a chance to read that book. I thought it was really good, but talk about that just a little.
Yeah. Give me one second here. It's
He's been a typical millennial right now. He's Googling.
Yeah, I'm looking it up. I actually gave the book to one of my friends, so I don't have it here anymore.
Well, and I think this is the point I'm making about reading. You don't have to have the book right in front of you, but the impact that book had on you certainly helped change your perspective on, you know, not only cop world, but it helped you change your perspective on the world in general, which when you look at your experience, you know, only in combat as well, but also in the field. One thing I think that people need to understand is that when you lead in an organization that has that many cops, you talk about maintaining morale is really hard because, like you said, it's busy enough to do a lot of work, but not everybody can have those, you know, assignments. Not everybody can be a detective. Not everybody can be a sergeant. Not everybody. And there's a lot of people who are kind of feel like they're stuck in that environment of, you know, no growth or kind of riding a midnight shift. So as a leader in a department that size, it takes a lot of work to lead in a good way. So anyway, go ahead.
Yeah. So the author of that is Don Miguel Ruiz, and the actual book is called The Four Agreements, A Practical Guide to Personal Freedom. And the four agreements themselves are: be impeccable with your word, don't take anything personal, don't make assumptions, and always do your best. And at face value, some of those seem kind of cliche, I guess, but you know, the first one I think is something that really translates to leadership with be impeccable with your word. That means be conscious of what's coming out of your mouth. If you're saying things that are negative, people around you are going to say things that are negative. If you're perpetuating gossip and rumor, your subordinates and people you're leading are going to think that's okay to do, and they're going to do it too. And that's a big thing with policing is, I think, making sure that what comes out of your mouth, especially as a leader, is something that's putting the conversation in a positive direction. And I get it, you know, you're going to partake in jokes and roll call banter and all that, and that's fine as long as it's in good nature, but don't have anything coming out of your mouth that's malicious or attacking an officer or saying something that's demeaning to the department, you know. Don't take anything personal. That you really got to look at. I see that a lot of decisions that are made in law enforcement come from a place of people taking things personal. They dig their heels in because they feel like they've been wronged, or they think that someone is, you know, trying to pull one over on them, and then they make a decision from ego instead of a place of objective reasonableness. And that's a dangerous thing. And
definitely.
You know, it obviously in everything in life, it's hard to say don't take things personal. But I think the real message of that is look at the source that it's coming from and decide if that's something you want to necessarily give value to and let it affect you. The don't make assumptions, that's a huge thing, you know, because I find myself doing this all the time. I look at a situation and I start extrapolating in my mind how it's going to play out before it even happens. And then I just ask the person or have the conversation, it goes completely fine. So I've caused myself all this stress for no reason, when in reality, everything's fine.
I mean, that is so true, right? I mean, it really is. So what else you read?
I read this book, Ego is the Enemy by Ryan Halliday, which is another one that's really good about decision-making and looking at where those decisions are coming from to, you know, decide, is this coming from my ego or is it coming from a place of good intention where I'm making this decision for what's best, not for, you know, what's best for me, or if it's something I'm prideful about, or am I making it in a professional way, basically? Am I really looking at this objectively?
Ego can really be a killer for a cop. I mean, and you know, one of the things happens is, when you have this ego thing going on, you can absolutely, without question, take things really personally, really quickly. So no doubt about it. So what's the third one you're reading?
It's called, look at that one up to right now.
I was hoping it was called Essential Leadership Lessons from the Thin Blue
Line. That's on the list, Dean. That's on the list. The one I'm reading right now, I'm almost done with, is it's called A New Earth, Awakening Your Life's Purpose by Eckhart Tolle. And that book is... it's basically about finding out your purpose in life in the small things. And I mean, this one talks a lot about ego too, because most of these books about spirituality come down to recognizing your ego and deciding if a decision is coming from that place or a place of pure intention. But one of the things in this book that I really enjoyed was it talks about the idea of finding your life's purpose and how overwhelming that can seem when you look at it in that sense. Because if someone feels they don't have purpose, they feel that their life is meaningless. But, you know, your purpose could be what you're doing that day. If you're having a conversation with a citizen and helping them in a really bad moment in your life, then that's your purpose right then. You know, if you're you know, going to your kid's soccer game or whatever, then that's your purpose, right? That it's a continuing reevaluating thing, finding out what your life's purpose is. It's not one specific thing you can put a label on to where if you don't meet that standard, you feel as though you've failed. Your purpose is different things at different times.
Oh yeah. I mean, absolutely. No question. Kelly, you want to chime in here before we close this thing out?
No, I just think it's amazing. What I was going to say in response to the Eckhart Tolle book is I actually listened to him talk about that book with Oprah, I think, not too long ago. And it was really a fascinating conversation. He's got a really interesting perspective. So
yeah, I spent a solid year reading nothing but military memoirs and things about World War II, Vietnam and Korea and things like that, and looking for leadership examples in that, and, you know, examples of good leaders, bad leaders, whatever. But I wanted to completely shift in a different direction. So for the last 6 months, I've been reading a lot of spiritual self-help books and stuff like that to try to get new ways of looking at things.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's just a great way to kind of round yourself out. It's great. Very interesting.
Oh, yeah, I mean, those are a great reading list right there for our folks on the podcast to kind of get an idea of what you're reading. You know, I was certainly impressed with you when we had our conversations. It's certainly obvious now to our audience that you got a lot going on, and you're certainly the future of law enforcement, and it looks really, really bright with folks like you. And I do appreciate your service. You didn't have to go into Marine Corps. Why did you? Why the Marine Corps?
Since I was a little kid, I wanted to be in the military. I think a lot of it came from wanting to impress my father. He always, you know, he was a big military guy. He was in the Navy, but he grew up watching war movies and stuff like that. And then it just, like I said, once that divorce happened, my home was really broken and I just needed a sense of purpose badly. And once I made that decision to join and sign the papers when I was 16, when this delayed entry program, I knew, okay, now I have this goal and I can't back out of this. So it gave me a lot of purpose, and, you know, policing has done that for me too. And it's a different purpose and a continually growing purpose, but one definitely translates to the other.
Oh, I mean, you know, you can tell it in you personally that those things have shaped you and kind of made you who you are. And I certainly was impressed. And as I said earlier, our audience will be too. So, Andrew, I really appreciate you joining us on the podcast. You've certainly made me better today by the things that you've talked about and some of the things in the perspective that you've given me. And I really appreciate that. I wish you nothing but the best. And it's very obvious to me and our audience that law enforcement is in great hands with folks like you as the future. So, you know, Andrew, again, thank you for your service. Thank you for being on our podcast. And I hope our listeners, if you've enjoyed this podcast, make sure that you share it with someone else. You push that subscribe button. You download it. We appreciate all the feedback. Got comments about our podcast? Let us know. And then we always want to know how to make your day better and your leadership better. So with that being said, as I always say on the podcast, until next time, I'm Dean Crisp.
You have been listening to Straight Talk on Leadership with Dean Crisp. We hope you have enjoyed the show. Please help us grow future leaders by liking, subscribing, reviewing, and sharing this podcast with others. At LHLN, we are all about growing leaders in all aspects of life. You can learn more about our classes at www.lhln.org, where you can register or request to host a class. Until next time, remember, leadership is simple, but it isn't easy. Keep growing, and be sure to put your leadership into action every day.